1850-715-815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And 51551 is our text number. Helena and Gerry O'Connor, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
That's
Hello, Joe, how are you?
Good. You've contacted us because of a catastrophic tragedy that befell your family in June 2011 when your son Gavin was murdered. What happened to Helena?
Gavin left the house on Friday night, Joe, to go to a music festival in Carrickmacross. He was a musician himself. He went to the festival every year. He socialised in Carrickmacross all the time. Mm-hmm. He left and he never came home. Gavin spent the night with his friends, having a few pints, listening to the different bands. Yeah. At approximately 20 past three, Gavin went back to his car where he had parked. He took off his runners, put them on the front seat and lay down and went to sleep. And approximately an hour later, his car was broken into mm-hmm. and driven out. We don't know where the assault took place, but Gavin was consequently assaulted with four rocks while he was sleeping in the back of his car. And then we don't know how he was got out of the car, but he was ran down with his own car.
My God.
And the guy then went to a friend's house, told him what he had done, and asked him would he go up the north with him to burn the car.
This is Connor McClelland.
Connor McClelland. And the guy that he went to rang the Gardaí to report that this guy wanted to go and burn a car and what he had done.
And Helena, I'll talk to you again about the subsequent happenings, but this man, Conor McClendon, was convicted of murder unanimously in the Central Criminal Court, which was sitting in Monaghan on the 18th of February last.
Yes.
It's only a few weeks ago. Why has it, and it's, I know this is one of the reasons you contacted, why has this not got national prominence?
That's what we'd like to know, Joe. Like, there was absolutely no media presence at the trial for such a horrific murder.
And Gerry, you're there as well on the other phone.
Nearly 2.5 weeks. And we went in and out of that courtroom as if we were going in and out of a sweet shop. It's as if nobody knew and nobody cared. And if I could let you know, Joe, what mm-hmm. this man did.
Yeah.
This man assaulted Gavin in the back of his car with a rock the size of your fist. To the extent that he probably knocked Gavin out.
Yeah.
He was able to go to the ditch and he took a rock out of the ditch to save your shoe. And he got back into the car and he battered the head of Gavin with the rock to the extent that he lost that rock. He went back to the ditch and he got another rock to save your shoe and he got back into the car and he continued to beat the head of Gavin with the rock till he lost it. He went back to the ditch again and he got a third rock to save your shoe and he bashed the head of Gavin till he lost that rock. He then went for a walk to cool himself off, is what he said. Mm-hmm. This is what he said.
Yeah.
And when he turned round, he said he seen Gavin standing on the road with his head covered in blood and his hands at his side. He said he got into his car, into Gavin's car, and he drove it at him. And he hit Gavin with such force that he split Gavin's skull in two. It was described as a hinge fracture. He split Gavin's skull in two. That's what this fella done. And nobody in the country knows anything about it. Because we don't know. It's as if we were forgotten. Shocking. This is what he done. The injury to his face was so bad that his eye sockets were smashed. And our boy was a beautiful boy. That's what this fella done.
Conor McClelland, and apparently
he, 5 o'clock in the morning.
And apparently he's what age is he? He was 22.
He was 19,
and he had 19. Many previous convictions that he have.
21.
And what were they for, Helena? Do you know?
That's right.
Yes. The day that Gavin died, mm-hmm. the liaison officer said to us outside the hospital, it was only a matter of time before he would do something like this.
Oh, my God.
And Gerry said back to him and he's left him on the street till he murdered our innocent son.
They didn't even know each other. No.
Yeah. In his car, asleep, the attack. When did you first hear about it?
10 to 7 on Saturday morning.
Mm-hmm.
Gavin's girlfriend, Aoife, rang me and she said John McMahon, Gavin's friend, rang her and said that Gavin was gone to Drogheda Hospital in an ambulance, seriously injured. We headed straight for Drogheda and on the way, Jerry's mobile rang and it was Carrick McCross Gardaí, informed us that Gavin had been involved in a hit and run at Listoonan. And we couldn't understand what was he doing at Listoonan. And when I got to the hospital, we were told straight away Gavin wasn't going to make it.
Oh, God.
Gavin's friend, John, arrived and he came over and he said to me, there's something peculiar about this, because he was at the roadside.
Okay.
And he said, Gavin had no shoes on him and they weren't on the roadside. Because Gavin's shoes were in his car.
And how did you then put the sequence of events together?
Well, for a long time we thought it was a hit and run.
Yeah.
I informed the guard at the hospital who actually drove the ambulance because the paramedics were needed in the back. And I informed him that Gavin's car was parked in Farney Street in Carrickmacross. I wasn't aware that the car had been stolen.
Mm-hmm.
And at one stage, the liaison officer came to me and he said to me, what kind of shoes was Gavin wearing? And I said he was wearing white runners. And he said, oh, that's okay, they're in the car. And I ran after him and I said to him, what car? And he said, I can't tell you anything at the minute, Helena. There's an investigation going on and I can't tell you anything. And I said, you have to tell me something. What is going on? And he said to me, all I can tell you at the moment is that there is an incident with Gavin's car and something else.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually he came to us and he told us they had arrested a guy for the murder of our son.
And they arrested Conor McClelland because...
We just need this made public. We need parents to be aware and make their children aware of what can happen.
And in the court, Gerry, you mentioned it was, what, 2.5 weeks you felt... We missed that opening remark you made. You felt you were going into in and out of a sweet shop. There was just no...
There was no media presence whatsoever. We were wondering, was this what trials are like or does anybody know that this is going on? Does anybody care? Were we supposed to ring somebody to say our son's murder trial is going ahead now? You know, it was every day, it just drained the life out of us. Every day there was new evidence coming out. Like, it was worse than we even thought it would be, you know? But again, we couldn't be told any of this before the trial because we wouldn't be supposed to know this. But, as I said, we come home every evening, we've been watching the news, we've been hearing about all the other things and crimes that's committed, and ours, it's as if it never happened, you know?
And
we listen to the radio, we listen to it every day, absolutely nothing. We're wondering, did this happen at all or not? You know, we felt as if we were disowned, that we don't matter, you know?
And the horror...
just ordinary people.
And because of the horror of it,
This is nightmare stuff. It's like we're sick. We'll never be right again. But people should know that there's death and there's death and there's murder and there's murder. But it took Gavin 12 hours today from this assault. Well, it's never going to be coming
now,
back.
Now, Gerry, Gavin was in cardiac arrest when the ambulance got there. And it took them 40 minutes to restart his heart. And they stopped numerous times between Listoonan and Drogheda to restart it. And when we got to the hospital, the consultant told us that when Gavin came in, they did a scan on him, and that the only way he could describe it was that Gavin's brain should have had 4 compartments, but all he had was a big red mush. And that the only reason his heart was still beating was because he was so young and strong, and that when his heart started to slow down and stop, they would not be restarting it.
The accident would be like to see Gavin, and we said we would.
Yeah.
And they said, well, look, give us a half an hour till we clean him up a bit. He's not pretty, and you're going to see something like you've never seen in your life. But we'll tidy him up, and we'll give you a shout. Then they contacted us to bring us into the ward where he was, and they opened the door, and we seen this thing on the bed. We turned back. We'd never imagined anything like it. You couldn't. So we went to go in a second time, and when we seen him, we couldn't. We turned back. 3 attempts it took to go in. And when we went in and went up to him, you'd never seen anything like it in your life. His head was three times the size of what it should have been. And we were devastated. But something came over us. We knew it was Gavin.
Yeah.
And we had his arm and it was warm. But his head was destroyed. It was shocking. Yeah. All Gavin's friends were destroyed. Destroyed, the worst day of our life. The worst day of our life, he was destroyed. Shocking stuff. Yes.
And
yes, we'll never get over it. Never. You seen the boy that left here on the Friday evening, but what we've seen on the Saturday evening, it wasn't human what was done to him. Fierce.
And to be just told fierce. To be told that with this man who killed him, Conor McLennan, that it was only a matter of time.
Yes.
Yeah.
19 years of age, nearly 20 previous convictions, including some for assault.
Yeah.
Yes.
He was obviously on the rampage through his teenage years, because that's when you gather up convictions.
Yeah.
And when you met him in court and saw him in court...
He stared us out of it.
Oh, God.
Not at the trial, at the original courts in Carrickmacross, he just would stare at us. But at the trial, he most of the time sat looking at the floor, and the only time he lifted his head was when the CCTV coverage of himself was on. He watched it. But when the CCTV coverage of Gavin walking to the nightclub and walking back to his car came on, he looked at the floor again.
And did McLennan... Now, another tragedy, unfortunately, in the meantime. Gavin had...
One brother.
And what happened?
Patrick was 33. He was a truck driver who drove around the country every day of the week in a big articulated truck. And on Saturday the 9th of November, Patrick headed up to Navan in his car, and we don't know what happened. He ended up losing control of the car, hit a pole and then hit a gate and was killed instantly.
That swooped him, took him on us in the middle of the day on a Saturday.
The Gardaí hadn't come back to us with the end of the investigation, so we have no idea.
We still don't know what happened.
To lose control.
We don't know.
So he never saw justice being done for his brother.
No, and he was adamant that justice would be done, and he was going to be with us throughout the trial. He was going to sit between us. Patrick was our rock from Gavin had died. He brought us through the death. He was always at the end of the phone. He only lived 3 miles away. You could ring him, and he'd be here in 10 minutes to you. But now he's
and now they're laying side by side.
We have one daughter left, and she's married and living in Australia with her husband and 2 children.
In the newspapers and on the 6-1 news and when the trial was going on and all these horrific details.
Well, the Anglo-Irish thing was going on in Dublin with Sean Fitzpatrick.
Started on the same day, the 4th, as far as we know.
Yeah. Okay.
And the whole coverage on the news was about what was going on in Dublin.
And there was other court things about somebody in the Dáil sending in false phone bills and different things, and that seemed to be more important than our son's death.
You want to bring it to attention is the fact, one, of the horror of what happened to your boy, and two, the fact that McLennan had so many previous convictions, up to 19 years of age.
And he was still walking the street. Yeah, like, in all fairness, Joe, somebody with that amount of conviction should not have been on the street.
And when the convictions were read...
So the 21 convictions were in the year from he was 18 to 19.
He was getting nearly 2 convictions a month.
Yeah. Like numerous times before he was charged with the murder, we'd be in court in Carrickmacross every month, and he'd always be up for something else as well, along with assault. It was assault, and he was charged with first, and then in September 2011, he was charged with murder. But every single time he was in court, he nearly was called up on something else as well. And even the day he was charged with the murder, he was up on some other conviction, and the judge said to him, "Oh, I remember you." He said, "I'll actually be charging you with murder later in the court."
And was he getting...
When he was charged with murder, he was asked, "How did he plead?" And that was the first time you heard him speaking. He says, "Not guilty. Not guilty."
Even though the evidence was overwhelming.
As I said, detective...
You know something, Joe? A guy like this has no friends. Before he actually assaulted Gavin, he rang a guy from Gavin's phone And he told him he was after stealing a car with a guy asleep in the back of it. And if he wakens up, I will have to hit him with a rock. And the guy told him to leave the car back where he got it. And he said, I can't because my fingerprints are all over it.
And he'd done that before he assaulted Gavin.
And he told the Gardaí that he ran Gavin down to cover his tracks and make it look like a hit-and-run accident.
We've been, and people know of horrific murders, but this is...
Well, I think it's one of the most horrific murders that ever happened.
Shocking. It's shocking. It was described in court as chilling. It put a shiver down your spine. Only to think of it, that my mind go through it, to think about it.
Of Gavin and has been sentenced to life imprisonment. Now, Michael McDonald has contacted us. Michael, good afternoon.
How are you, Joe?
You were covering the trial.
I was covering the trial for the local newspaper in Monaghan, which is the Northern Standard,
yeah.
And we did cover it extensively.
Of course, yeah.
Now, it's true that there didn't seem to be a very low level of interest from the national media. I was surprised, first of all, that there wasn't other people and we weren't scrambling for places even to report it.
Yeah.
But I did send daily updates to national newspapers, all national newspapers, not every national newspaper every day, but given regular updates either via myself directly or via a colleague who regularly reports. But it didn't seem to be breaking the ice, which I found very surprising given the sort of the harrowing nature and very unusual nature of the case, because it was a horrendous case. I was told by it certainly was, and I think that part of the problem seems to be, or what seems to have come out of this, is that the national media are not used to the idea of cases of this level or murder cases being held anywhere other than in the Central Criminal Court. And they're used to getting their reports from the media franchise that operates from the CCC. You know, it was a horrific case. I felt a certain rapport with Gavin myself, because I was a sort of used to play rock music myself in bands. I've seen videos of him playing even the same songs we used to play, and you felt that, and it all the way through it, every bit of new evidence that came out, you know, it was bad. There was, you know, there was no sunlight in this at all. It was a terrible case.
Irene Murphy is, I think, Irene, good afternoon. And I know you want to empathise and offer your sympathies and condolences to Helena and Jerry.
That's even too simple, Joe, to even say it. I'm not knocking what you're saying, but
I know.
Just to put you in the picture, I'm actually out in Shangana. That's the graveyard, I'm sure you know it, out in Shankill here. And I'm at my son's graveside. He committed suicide 9 years ago. And, you know, I come here a couple of times a week. Joe, can you hear me okay?
Loud and clear, Irene.
Yeah, it's just a bloody phone.
No, you're okay.
It's just going to go any second. But however, I sit here week after week and I think, oh my God, my life, and how can I try to carry on for my children? But having heard that couple, Joe, I really cannot tell you how brokenhearted I am for them. And I can honestly say that I can say now that there is worse than what happened to Lorcan.
To your
and
boy.
I'm so sorry for them.
Yeah.
I really am.
Oh, I'm still on.
Jerry is still there. That's Jerry.
Helena's phone went flat, I think.
Okay,
I know. I think, Jerry, mine will go flat as well too. But I want you to know that I am feeling so deeply for you. I've never heard such, oh my God, the inhumanity. That's just the word for it, the inhumanity.
And you're representative.
And
you're representative, Irene, of so many other callers as well, saying
well,
the same
thing. Yeah, I'm glad I understand.